Helena Petrovna von Hahn, more popularly known as Madame Blavatsky, or HPB, came from a noble family in Ukraine. Her father, Peter von Hahn, was a descendant of German nobility, while her mother, Helena Andreevna Hahn, came from one of the oldest families of Russian nobility and was also a celebrated novelist. As a child, she would often have visions and displayed clairvoyance as well as other metaphysical phenomena. Years later, she traveled throughout Europe and the Middle East, studying under various teachers and Sufi saints. She met her teacher, an Indian yogi named Master Moria, in London, who later directed her to go to New York in the United States. Once there, she founded the Theosophical Society. In 1885, she started to write The Secret Doctrine, which was finally published 3 years later in 1888. The Secret Doctrine has been acknowledged by many as one of the most remarkable books in the world. It is considered to be the Bible of Theosophy, a source book of the esoteric tradition that outlines the fundamental tenets of the secret doctrine of the past ages. Published as two volumes during her lifetime, The Cosmogenesis and Anthropogenesis, The Secret Doctrine explains the origin and evolution of the universe and of humanity through an account of root races dating back millions of years. Although the writer of The Secret Doctrine, Madame Blavatsky, often expressed that she was only the compiler of ancient wisdom that was passed on to her, the true authors of the work were her teachers, the Mahatmas, or great souls, who were the guardians of the secret wisdom of the ages. Today on Between Master and Disciples, we invite you to listen to The Voice of Silence and The Two Paths, excerpts from Madame Blavatsky's book, The Voice of Silence.
The Voice of the Silence by H.P. Blavatsky. Fragment 1. The Voice of Silence. These instructions are for those ignorant of the dangers of the lower ibdi, or psychic faculties. He who would hear the voice of nada, the soundless sound, and comprehend it, he has to learn the nature of tarana, or the intense and perfect concentration of the mind on an interior object.
Having become indifferent to objects of perception, the pupil must seek out the Raja of the senses, the thought producer, he who awakes illusion. The mind is the great slayer of the real. Let the disciple slay the slayer, for when to himself his form appears unreal, as do on waking all the forms he sees in dreams, when he has ceased to hear the many, he may discern the one, the inner sound which kills the outer. Then only, not till then, shall he forsake the region of Asat, the false, to come unto the realm of Sat, the true.
Before the soul can see, the harmony within must be attained, and fleshy eyes be rendered blind to all illusion. Before the soul can hear, the image or man has to become as deaf to roarings as to whispers, to cries of bellowing elephants as to the silvery buzzing of the golden firefly. Before the soul can comprehend and may remember, she must unto the silent speaker be united, just as the form to which the clay is modeled is first united with the potter's mind, for then the soul will hear and will remember. And then to the inner ear will speak the voice of the silence, and say, if thy soul smiles while bathing in the sunlight of thy life, if thy soul sings within her chrysalis of flesh and matter, if thy soul weeps within her castle of illusion, if thy soul struggles to break the silver thread that binds her to the master or higher self, know, O disciple, thy soul is of the earth.
When to the world's turmoil thy budding soul lends ear, when to the roaring voice of the great illusion thy soul responds, when frightened at the sight of the hot tears of pain, when deafened by the cries of distress, thy soul withdraws like the shy turtle within the carapace of selfhood. Learn, O disciple, of her silent God, thy soul is an unworthy shrine.
When waxing stronger, thy soul glides forth from her secure retreat, and breaking loose from the protecting shrine, extends her silver thread and rushes onward. When beholding her image on the waves of space, she whispers, this is I. Declare, O disciple, that thy soul is caught in the webs of delusion.
This earth, disciple, is the hall of sorrow, wherein are set along the path of dire probations traps to ensnare thy ego by the delusion called great heresy. This earth, O ignorant disciple, is but the dismal entrance leading to the twilight that precedes the valley of true light, that light which no wind can extinguish, that light which burns without a wick or fuel.
Saith the great law, in order to become the knower of all self, thou hast first of self to be the knower. To reach the knowledge of that self, thou hast to give up self to non-self, being to non-being, and then thou canst repose between the wings of the great bird. Ay, sweet is rest between the wings of that which is not born nor dies, but is the Om throughout eternal ages.
Bestride the bird of life, if thou wouldst know. Give up thy life, if thou wouldst live. Three halls, O weary pilgrim, lead to the end of toils. Three halls, O conqueror of Mara, or great ensnarer, will bring thee through three states, into the fourth, and thence into the seven worlds, the worlds of rest eternal.
If thou wouldest learn their names, then hearken and remember. The name of the first hall is ignorance. Avidya is the hall in which thou sawest the light, in which thou livest and shalt die. The name of hall, the second, is the hall of learning. In it thy soul will find the blossoms of life, but under every flower a serpent coiled. The name of the third hall is wisdom, beyond which stretch the shoreless waters of Akshura, the indestructible fount of omniscience.
If thou wouldst cross the first hall safely, let not thy mind mistake the fires of lust that burn therein for the sunlight of life. If thou wouldst cross the second safely, stop not the fragrance of its stupefying blossoms to inhale. If freed thou wouldst be from the karmic chains, seek not for thy guru in those mayavic or illusory regions.
The wise ones tarry not in pleasure grounds of senses. The wise ones heed not the sweet-tongued voices of illusion. Seek for him who is to give thee birth. In the hall of wisdom, the hall which lies beyond, wherein all shadows are unknown, and where the light of truth shines with unfading glory. That which is uncreated abides in thee, disciple, as it abides in that hall. If thou wouldest reach it and blend the two, thou must divest thyself of thy dark garments of illusion. Stifle the voice of flesh, allow no image of the senses to get between its light and thine, that thus the twain, or the two, may blend in one. And having learnt thine own ajnana, or ignorance or non-wisdom, flee from the hall of learning. This hall is dangerous in its perfidious beauty, is needed but for thy probation. Beware, Lanu, O disciple, lest dazzled by elusive radiance, thy soul should linger and be caught in its deceptive light.
This light shines from the jewel of the great ensnarer, Mara. The senses it bewitches, blinds the mind, and leaves the unwary an abandoned wreck. The moth attracted to the dazzling flame of thy night lamp is doomed to perish in the viscid oil. The unwary soul that fails to grapple with the mocking demon of illusion will return to earth, the slave of Mara, or the great ensnarer.
Behold the host of souls. Watch how they hover o'er the stormy sea of human life, and how exhausted, bleeding, broken-winged, they drop one after other on the swelling waves. Tossed by the fierce winds, chased by the gale, they drift into the eddies and disappear within the first great vortex.
If through the hall of wisdom thou wouldst reach the veil of bliss, disciple, close fast thy senses against the great dire heresy of separateness that weans thee from the rest. Let not thy heaven-born, merged in the sea of Maya or illusion, break from the universal parent or soul. But let the fiery power retire into the inmost chamber, the chamber of the heart, and the abode of the world's mother. Then from the heart that power shall rise into the sixth, the middle region, the place between thine eyes, when it becomes the breath of the one soul, the voice which filleth all thy master's voice. 'Tis only then thou canst become a walker of the sky, who treads the winds above the waves, whose step touches not the waters. Before thou setst thy foot upon the ladder's upper rung, the ladder of the mystic sounds, thou hast to hear the voice of thy inner God, or the higher self, in seven manners.
The first is like the nightingale's sweet voice chanting a song of parting to its mate. The second comes as the sound of a silver cymbal of the Dhyanis, or lords of meditation, awakening the twinkling stars. The next is the plaint melodious of the ocean sprite imprisoned in its shell. And this is followed by the chant of Yana, or Indian string instrument. The fifth like sound of bamboo flute shrills in thine ear. It changes next into a trumpet blast. The last vibrates like the dull rumbling of a thundercloud. The seventh swallows all the other sounds. They die and then are heard no more. When the six are slain and at the master's feet are laid, then is the pupil merged into the one, becomes that one and lives therein.
Before that path is entered, thou must destroy thy lunar body, cleanse thy mind body, and make clean thy heart. Eternal life's pure waters, clear and crystal, with the monsoon tempest's muddy torrents cannot mingle. Heaven's dewdrop glittering in the morn's first sunbeam within the bosom of the lotus, when dropped on earth, becomes a piece of clay. Behold, the pearl is now a speck of mire.
Strive with thy thoughts unclean before they overpower thee. Use them as they will thee, for if thou sparest them and they take root and grow, know well, these thoughts will overpower and kill thee. Beware, disciple, suffer not and thou, it be their shadow, to approach. For it will grow, increase in size and power, and then this thing of darkness will absorb thy being before thou hast well realized the black foul monster's presence.
Before the mystic power, or kundalini, or mystic fire, can make of thee a god, Lanu, thou must have gained the faculty to slay thy lunar form at will. The self of matter and the self of spirit can never meet. One of the twain must disappear. There is no place for both.
Thy soul's mind can understand, the bud of personality must be crushed out, the worm of sense destroyed past resurrection. Thou canst not travel on the path before thou hast become that path itself. Let thy soul lend its ear to every cry of pain, like as the lotus spares its heart to drink the morning sun. Let not the fierce sun dry one tear of pain before thyself has wiped it from the sufferer's eyes, but let each burning human tear drop on thy heart and there remain, nor ever brush it off until the pain that caused it is removed.
These tears, O thou of heart most merciful, these are the streams that irrigate the fields of charity immortal. 'Tis on such soil that grows the midnight blossom of Buddha, more difficult to find, more rare to view, than is the flower of the Vogai tree. It is the seed of freedom from rebirth. It isolates the arhat both from strife and lust. It leads him through the fields of being unto the peace and bliss known only in the land of silence and non-being.
Kill out desire, but if thou killest it, take heed, lest from the dead it should again arise. Kill love of life, but if thou slayest tanha, or fear of death, and love for life, Let this not be for thirst of life eternal, but to replace the fleeting by the everlasting.
Desire nothing. Chafe not at karma or retribution, nor at nature's changeless laws, but struggle only with the personal, the transitory, the evanescent, and the perishable. Help nature, and work on with her, and nature will regard thee as one of her creators and make obeisance. And she will open wide before thee the portals of her secret chambers, lay bare before thy gaze the treasures hidden in the very depths of her pure virgin bosom. Unsullied by the hand of matter, she shows her treasures only to the eye of spirit, the eye which never closes, the eye for which there is no veil in all her kingdoms. Then will she show thee the means and way, the first gate, and the second, the third up to the very seventh, and then the goal, beyond which lie, bathed in the sunlight of the spirit, glories untold, unseen by any save the eye of the soul.
There is but one road to the path. At its very end alone, the voice of the silence can be heard. The ladder by which the candidate ascends is formed of rungs of suffering and pain. These can be silenced only by the voice of virtue. Woe, then, to thee, disciple, if there is one single vice thou hast not left behind. For then the ladder will give way and overthrow thee. Its foot rests in the deep mire of thy sins and failings. And ere thou canst attempt to cross this wide abyss of matter, thou hast to lave thy feet in waters of renunciation. Beware lest thou shouldest set a foot still soiled upon the ladder's lowest rung. Woe unto him who dares pollute one rung with miry feet. The foul, vicious mud will dry, become tenacious, then glue his feet unto the spot, and like a bird caught in the wily fowler's lime, he will be stayed from further progress. His vices will take shape and drag him down. His sins will raise their voices like as the jackals laugh and sob after the sun goes down. His thoughts become an army and bear him of a captive slave.
We thank you for your kind presence for today's episode of Between Master and Disciples. Join us again next Wednesday for part two of excerpts from Madame Blavatsky's book, The Voice of Silence. Now, please stay tuned to Supreme Master Television for Planet Earth, Our Loving Home, coming up next, right after Noteworthy News. May Providence guide you in wisdom and love.
For more details, please visit www.suprememastertv.com/BMD.